Zinaida Velasquez is a Honduran human rights activist. She is based here in the United States. She's one of the founders of COFADE, the Committee of Relatives of the Disappeared in Honduras. That takes us to 7:49 in the morning. The program's up front. My name is Brian Edwards-Tiegert, and we're going to turn to census news. As you heard last week, the Supreme Court did at least temporarily block the addition of a citizenship question to the 2020 census. But that was not the only problem regarding the undercounting of people. And the folks in charge of running the census are the same ones that wanted to put that citizenship question on. Amir DeMulsey took a look at issues confronting people of Middle Eastern and North African background. In the 2010 census, many Arab American and Iranian American organizations urged their communities to choose other in the ethnicity section and write in their national origin to make it easier for them to be counted. They have also been working with the Census Bureau to try to include a special category for their communities on the census form because they currently don't have one. The Obama administration welcomed those recommendations. They were testing a new category. It was close to receiving its final approval. But when the Trump administration came into power, the Census Bureau announced that the three-year testing process was not sufficient and decided not to include a Middle East and North African category, a MENA category, on the 2020 census form. Our reporter Mira Nabulsi has more.
The 2020 census will inform these decisions and shape how billions of dollars will be distributed to communities like yours each year. And in 2020, you can respond to the census online, by phone, or by mail. It's easy, safe, and important. Make sure you and everyone you know is counted.
Civil rights groups are warning that with or without a citizenship question on the census, immigrant communities will have a higher degree of anxiety about answering the questionnaire. The problems of underrepresentation of Latino and Asian communities in the census have been well documented. But another group that has suffered the consequences of the Trump administration's politicization of the census has been people of Middle Eastern and North African background, often referred to as the MENA region. They won't be counted as a category in the 2020 census, although the census will be available in Arabic for the first time.
The Arab American Institute was established in 1985. The effort to secure a better count for our community started even before that. The founders of our institution have been working on this issue for a long time. Our first partnership with the Census Bureau happened in 1990 officially, when we put out posters and campaigns saying we're Arab American and proud, stand up and be counted. And it featured movie stars and other luminaries who are Arab American background.
That's Maya Berri, the executive director of the Arab American Institute, a national organization that has been leading the effort to get Arabs in the U.S. accurately counted. She says at some point her organization was advocating for an Arab racial category, but this was later changed to include more national backgrounds under the MENA category.
MENA itself would include the 22 Arab members of the Arab League, as well as Iran, Turkey, and Israel. And again, it's a geographical designation that allows people within that to identify their country of origin. And it's been a very positive development in that, again, the Census Bureau officials understood the importance of it. It was accurately pulled together. It was tested in the field. It was demonstrated to improve the count. And regrettably, the politics of it seem to have prevented it from being on 2020.
The Obama administration supported adding a MENA category. It would have been one of the biggest readjustments of racial definitions in decades, with implication for anti-discrimination laws and even health research. When the Trump administration came into power, it said that further testing was needed. This is Karen Battle, chief of the Census Population Division.
So what we meant by that is that, yes, we do feel that more research and testing is needed before we can proceed to implement or propose to implement a separate Middle Eastern or North African category. And the testing that we've done over the past few years, we have tested a MENA separate category as an ethnicity in a combined question format. So what we need to do is to do more research and testing where we're testing MENA as an ethnicity separately from the race question.
But organizers who worked on the question said the MENA category already was tested across a survey of over a million households. The Trump administration's decision to drop the category was accompanied by another decision to scrap a planned overhaul that would have listed Hispanic under the race question instead of a separate ethnicity question. Maya Berri from the Arab American Institute believes the census has been politicized. Not only did her community lose the MENA category, but she says she was also shocked when she learned about the Office of Commerce attempt to include a citizenship question. She says it's a concern to immigrant communities regardless of citizenship status.
The question was, the way it was drafted, that said, are you a citizen, yes or no? And if not, there was a question about what year you were naturalized and where you were from. I mean, these are the kinds of things that I think under any circumstance, people would say, why would you ask such a question on the census? But under a Trump administration and under the kind of climate that we've seen, I think any individual would stop and say, this is designed to gather information about me in a way that might be detrimental to me and my family and my community. And that is exactly the concern that we heard when we did our testing.
Despite these concerns, Arab American organizers say they want an accurate count. Organizers were hoping that a detailed understanding of which communities have concentrations of Arabs and Arab Americans would help them with electoral organizing, especially as many such communities are known to be in swing states. But it's also a bread and butter issue. Lara Kiswani, director of the Arab Cultural and Community Center, or AROC, in San Francisco, says such communities are underserved and lack official recognition and opportunities.
You know, as somebody who grew up in the United States, I also remember not ever seeing a category in any sort of, whether it was a scholarship or any sort of service given to different communities. And Arab was never like a category that you could find services for, right? So that's based on the fact that we're not accounted for. Arabic interpreters in the district, how they decide on what languages are what they call threshold languages, that they will provide interpretation at county at departments, in meetings, and so how much accessibility there is for language is based on how many people they say live in that district that speak that language, right? So on a very basic level, Arabic is not a threshold language.
It takes 10,000 people to constitute a so-called threshold community. Kiswani says she's not sure of the exact number of the Arab population in San Francisco, but she knows it's undercounted from the numbers of students her organization works with. She says she noticed a recent increase in immigrants from Yemen, Syria, and North African countries, some of whom are in the country without authorization. If they aren't counted, those groups don't get, for instance, language support at health facilities or the DMV.
The way in which the United States society works, it's like they operate around scarcity. It's always a sense that we don't have enough to give to everybody, right? And so we have to, that's what ends up happening on a county and state level. It's like, who are we going to give first? Who do we need to prioritize? We don't have enough to help everybody, right? So this sense of scarcity is how they actually move and how they make decisions and how they relate to different communities. And that's what we're up against. And that's why you have to fight for, no, we have this many people, because unless you can prove that point, then they don't think you're worthy.
MENA scholars have long talked about a paradox facing Arab, Muslim, and the MENA communities of invisibility in the U.S. social and political life, and at the same time what they have called hyper-visibility when it comes to policing or more recent policies like Trump's Muslim ban. Lubna Khotami is a postdoctoral fellow in ethnic studies at UC Berkeley. She says this paradox has links to the history of immigration in the U.S.
It dates back historically, and it's deeply, deeply embedded in the different ways that immigrant communities experienced kind of different forms of alienation and discrimination here in the United States, dating back to Alien Sedition Acts, to the Chinese Exclusion Act, and different ways that immigrant communities were never kind of seen as part of the fabric of the U.S. National imaginary, because it was something that was largely dominated by white middle class, what it meant to be a white middle class American.
Kotami says stereotypes of Arabs and Middle Easterners existed long before the September 11 attacks and links to what the late scholar Edward Said described as Orientalism.
We have this history of Orientalism, as it's been coined by Dr. Edward Said, who talked about the way the West gazes at the East and paints this entire region with a single stroke, you know, homogenizing a region of millions of people, many different cultures and ethnicities and religions, and kind of creating one really reductive, simplified stereotype of that community. And largely that stereotype for a very, very long time had been the stereotype of the backward, barbaric, savage, Muslim, Middle Eastern, Eastern Arab other, which was incapable of integrating and assimilating into American cultural and political life, and which actually posed a direct social, cultural, and political threat.
Such views were instrumental in U.S. foreign policy towards the Middle East, including the invasion of Iraq and the war on terror. What followed domestically, Khotami says, is treating immigrants of these communities with suspicion and a strengthening of the security apparatus by further militarizing the police and the borders. The impact was felt not just in the MENA communities, but also on already struggling black and brown bodies. Because of that, Kutami says, while it is hard to guess the exact reason why the MENA category was not added to the census, it is safe to assume that the Trump administration has no interest in a more organized Arab or MENA community.
It would be deeply complicated for them to have MENA communities racially classified on their own terms in the census, because that would allow them to have a stronger political mobilization in this country to make their voices heard on federal, state, and local levels in ways that they're not heard right now, mm-hmm. in order to understand the needs and demographics of their community and through community-based organizations respond to those needs to empower the community. And I think that those are all things that the government under a Trump administration does not want to see. They do not want to see healthy, thriving MENA communities in a context where they rely on the vilification of MENA communities in order to expand imperialist wars overseas and in order to expand securitization and militarization of police and borders here in the U.S. Mm-hmm.
Kotami and others say the census is an important community organizing tool and that the benefits of participating may outweigh the dangers, especially if communities are able to organize themselves and stand in the face of the Trump administration's attempts to weaponize people's answers to the census. From Berkeley for KPFA News, I am Mira Nabulsi.
And that takes us to 8:02 in the morning here at KPFA 94.1 FM in Berkeley, KPFB 89.3 FM in Berkeley, KFCF 88.1 FM in Fresno, K248BR 97.5 FM in Santa Cruz, and online around the world at www.kpfa.org. Coming up in the second hour of our program, Kat Brooks speaks to Charlene Carruthers about her new book, Unapologetic, A Black, Queer, and Feminist Mandate for Radical Movements. That's next after the news.